it's time for a weekly look at the top stories in national politics. A recording of President Trump and his personal lawyer has been released, apparently talking about a payment to prevent a story from coming out before Election Day 2016. The White House is considering revoking security clearances for some former intelligence officials, and the White House says it's going to provide $12 billion in aid for farmers affected by retaliatory tariffs. And that's our question of the week for you. What do you think of the White House plan to give out this aid to farmers after other countries responded to steel and aluminum tariffs from the U.S.? If you're a farmer yourself, do you see this as a good move or the wrong answer? And if so, what would you like to see instead? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Amanda Turkle is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Huffington Post. Amanda, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, yesterday, Amanda, this recording was released. It's then-candidate Donald Trump talking with his personal attorney, Michael Cohen, apparently about buying the silence of former model Karen McDougal, who alleged a year-long affair with Trump. The story was bought but not published by a media company owned by Trump's friend, David Pecker. Let's take a listen to what was released here.
I need to open up a company for the transfer of all of that info regarding our friend David, you know, so that I'm going to do that right away. I've actually come up and I've spoken to Alan Weisselberg about how to set the whole thing up with funding. All the stuff, because, you know, you never know where that company, correct. So I'm all over that. And I spoke to Alan about it when it comes time for the financing, which will be...
Listen, what financing?
We'll have to pay you, so...
I'll pay with cash.
Amanda, people are trying to break down what exactly was going on, some disputes over what exactly some of the audio meant. What are some of the main takeaways from the release of this audio?
So the main takeaway is that people in the White House have been lying for quite some time. I mean, I remember Hope Hicks, who obviously used to be a top communications aide to Trump, saying that we don't know anything about any payment. She said any claim of the affair was totally untrue. Her exact quote was, "We have no knowledge of any of this." I mean, that's obviously not true. I mean, maybe Hope Hicks didn't have knowledge of this, but Trump obviously did, because now he's caught on tape talking about this. And the other thing that struck me is that this doesn't sound like two men who are making a deal like this for the first time. They seem to be pretty familiar with what they're doing. Trump doesn't actually seem surprised by any of this, which obviously brings up the question of how many other deals they've done. And we obviously know about Stormy Daniels, that there was Michael Cohen supposedly paid her off to keep quiet about another affair with Donald Trump. Rudy Giuliani, Trump's lawyer, said that this would look good. This would be exculpatory for the president if it came out. But you can get into disagreements about whether Trump said pay her with a check or whether he's talked about cash. Regardless, I don't think it makes him look good.
Is there any thought that anything potentially illegal was involved here, though?
That's unclear, and I think that's where some of the questions about the financing and the structure are. Were they trying to hide the payments when they were sending them over to David Pecker, you know, just months before the election? We don't really know in some of the audio spotty, but I don't know the legal ramifications for what this means for Trump.
And a big part of the story here is that tapes like this exist at all. Michael Cohen, as Trump's attorney, was taping some of these conversations, and now willingly or unwillingly, as this case proceeds, they are being released here.
Right. And Trump's team is saying that's the real outrage, that Cohen recorded the conversations with Trump. And I don't think most people think that's the real outrage. Maybe Trump supporters find that to be the real outrage. But, you know, once again, you have Trump in his own words caught on tape, which contradicts things he's been telling the public for quite some time. And I just, again, I don't think that looks good. It seems clear why he was so upset. when authorities raided Michael Cohen's office, because Michael Cohen has Trump's secrets. And maybe he knew that Cohen was recording their conversations. Maybe he didn't. But I think Trump knows there's more out there.
We're talking about some of the top stories in national politics with Amanda Turkle from Huffington Post. Let's move on now. We've got this ongoing back and forth, Amanda, on tariffs with other countries, counter tariffs responding to our steel and aluminum tariffs. And now the White House saying, hey, we're going to use some of our executive authority to give $12 billion of relief to farmers who are affected by retaliatory tariffs. Do we know much in terms of details of how this would work?
Well, it would go to producers of soybeans, corn, wheat, cotton, dairy, hogs, and sorghum, who would be compensated according to the size of their harvest this year. The government would also purchase surplus products like beef, pork, and some other things that would be sent to food banks or through other government programs. I think that the problem here for a lot of people is that this is seen as temporary. This is $12 billion, which seems like a lot, but there are estimates that already corn, wheat, and soybean farmers, there is a study done, they've already lost more than $13 billion because of this trade war. The $12 billion may not be enough. And the question is, does the Trump administration really want to keep paying farmers just to continue these tariffs, which a lot of people see as political and sort of, red meat for his base. And many Republicans and Democrats are critical of this. And it's just, creating this massive government bailout for farmers because of Trump's tariff just strikes many people as not something they like seeing.
Yeah, Wisconsin Republican Senator Ron Johnson has been critical of the tariffs. And he said in response to this aid program, he was interviewed yesterday, he said, quoting here, "This is becoming more and more like a Soviet type of economy," end quote. And he said in a separate statement that farmers are looking for trade, not aid. So can you talk about the response from Republicans in particular who are not necessarily on board with this?
I mean, their response is a lot like what Senator Johnson is saying. If you pay farmers, they're arguing, to alleviate some of the pain in the short term, what farmers are saying is like, look, these contracts took us years to get. And so the trade war that you're starting, the aid isn't going to make up for it because we're not going to be able to get those contracts back. This is really hurting us in the long term. And a lot of Republicans are just, as Senator Johnson alluded to pretty bluntly, actually, they're not comfortable with creating a massive government program and another bailout. I don't know if it's really a Soviet program, but it is something that usually conservatives don't want to see.
We invited our callers to weigh in on this aid to farmers affected by retaliatory tariffs at 800-642-1234. Aaron is on the line in Peshtigo. Aaron, hi.
Hey, good afternoon.
What do you think?
I'm a farmer in Peshtigo, and I think these tariffs were completely short-sighted and ill thought out from the get-go. Whenever there's any sort of trade or policy dispute of any sort, farmers are usually the ones that end up footing the bill for it. These markets took years to produce. I'm a grass-fed beef producer. It's only been 2 years since we've been able to export beef to China, and now those markets are being cut off. That $12 billion is just a drop in the bucket for the damage that this is being caused. I got a neighbor that has lost $60,000 on soybeans sitting in his grain bins in the last 2 months because of the price drop from these tariffs. If the government really wants to help farmers, they need to work on opening up more markets, supporting small farmers by breaking up agribusiness conglomerates and putting more money towards ag research.
Aaron, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Taylor with us in Rushford, Minnesota. Taylor, hi.
Hey. This bailout subsidies or whatever you want to call it is just like any other farm program where any money that's in the pot is going to go to the largest corporate ag industry, farmers, whatever you want to call them, you can think of. The small guy, they're not going to get nothing. The way ag is going today, they want you to either get big or get out.
Taylor, are you a farmer yourself?
Yes, we have organic dairy along with beef and ewes. cheap.
Taylor, thanks a lot for calling in. And Amanda, politically, and we saw in Wisconsin and some other places, some rural counties were some of the places where you saw the biggest swings from Obama voters to Trump voters. Does that, you think, factor into the decision on this $12 billion of aid?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Trump announced it right before he's scheduled to visit Iowa, which is the nation's top soybean producer. I mean, Trump recognizes that he can't lose the votes of farmers. I mean, as your callers made clear, this aid might be not enough to fix that damage. But, I mean, there are other industries affected here besides farming. You know, Senator Lisa Murkowski from Alaska has said that it's great that you're providing temporary relief for farmers, but what about manufacturing industries and the energy industries who are also affected by this? Trump may not see them as politically valuable, so they're not getting immediate help. And I think that's why this troubles a lot of lawmakers, too, is that this is just not a long-term, well-thought-out solution. This is something to help a group of politically valuable voters, basically.
Talking to Amanda Turkle, Washington Bureau Chief at the Huffington Post, about the top national news stories of the week. You can still weigh in on our question of the week at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this idea of $12 billion of aid to farmers affected by retaliatory tariffs? By the way, we'll talk about this more tomorrow after 4:30. And Senator Ron Johnson will be on the morning show. I believe it's at about 7:40 tomorrow morning, talking about these issues as well. We continue our conversation with Amanda Turkle of the Huffington Post about the top political stories of the week in national politics. Take another caller on our question of the week about support for farmers affected by retaliatory tariffs. Bob is with us in Fond du Lac. Bob, hi.
Hey, how are you doing today? Nice talking to you.
Thanks.
This is a case of an excess of short-sightedness. The Argentinians have taken up the slack on U.S. soybean purchases from China. And the other problem that's become evident in the news is that the Chinese have moved into doing a lot of work in Africa on soybean planting. This has, and the Russians as well, in terms of soybean production. This has actually, in the long term, demoted the commodity use of America as a supplier of food to the world. One more step backwards. $12 billion, peanuts.
Bob, thanks a lot for the call. Amanda, as a candidate, Donald Trump definitely hit this trade issue. He was opposed to free trade agreements. He talked about tariffs on the campaign trail. Not a lot of support among Republicans in Congress, as we were talking about. Are there any efforts in Congress to step in on these tariffs?
I don't know how much we'll see on this. We hear Congress talk a lot about doing things, and we don't see much. They have talked about trying to blunt these, but again, so far we haven't really seen anything. The problem for Republicans is, although many of them disagree with these tariffs, and many of their constituents, I mean, we're hearing on the phone, many farmers are upset with these. The president is incredibly popular right now. He has sky-high approval ratings with his base, and it's higher than what many Republicans in Congress have. So they're afraid to cross him on any issue. I mean, the most criticism we've seen of him was his press conference with Vladimir Putin, and that was actually also incredibly popular with the Republican base. So Republicans so far just not willing to go against him that much.
Thanks to our callers on that topic. We'll have more on the subject of trade and support for trade tomorrow morning after 7 on the morning show, tomorrow at 4:30 here on Central Time. Let's move on to another issue. Amanda, you recently wrote about how Democrats in the U.S. Senate are approaching President Trump's Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. There's not really a lot in their toolkit to do to stop this, right?
No, they definitely don't have a lot. I mean, I have heard people say that Democrats should just shut down the Senate. They shouldn't show up for work. They should deny a quorum so that the Senate can't do any of its business. But none of those solutions will really work. Democrats are in the minority, and so there's just not much they can do. So they're focusing on messaging, and particularly their strategy is they need to keep their entire caucus together in voting against Brett Kavanaugh. And they are trying to win over one Republican senator to vote against him. And the two targets are Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, both tend to be more moderate Republicans, and they have expressed support for abortion and funding Planned Parenthood. And so Democrats are really hammering that Brett Kavanaugh could overturn Obamacare, and he could overturn Roe v. Wade, the landmark abortion ruling. And so that's where Democrats are focusing their efforts.
And Amanda, you said all Democrats are would need to stay together to stop this, and they need to get a Republican to cross the aisle. Neither side of that equation is a sure thing, right?
No, definitely not. I mean, there were three Democrats, Heidi Heitkamp from North Dakota, Joe Manchin from West Virginia, and Joe Donnelly from Indiana, who crossed the aisle and voted for Neil Gorsuch, Trump's first Supreme Court pick. I think that the calculation may be a little bit different for those red state senators this time around because, you know, this Neil Gorsuch was replacing Antonin Scalia, another conservative, but this Supreme Court pick would be replacing Anthony Kennedy, who tends to be more moderate. And the fact that Brett Kavanaugh is known as a really strong conservative and not a moderate might give Democrats and perhaps some Republicans pause.
What are the key issues that Democrats are going to focus on? You mentioned abortion access and Roe versus Wade as one of them. Are there other things we might be seeing ads for, especially in states with a Senate election coming up?
Those are the big ones. But the other ones you might see a little bit on is this issue of executive power and Russia and Trump being, you know, the special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. Brett Kavanaugh is known as a big defender of executive power, basically saying that the president has unlimited power to govern the executive branch as he so chooses. And then that just troubles a lot of Democrats who say that Trump is nominating him because if the special counsel on the Russia stuff ever reaches the Supreme Court, he'll let Trump off the hook. So there are some Democrats who are saying that Brett Kavanaugh should recuse himself from any issue that comes before the Supreme Court regarding the special counsel. I don't think you'll hear Brett Kavanaugh say that, but there are some Democrats who are bringing up this issue and are going to probably keep doing so.
Talking to Amanda Turkel from the Huffington Post about some of the top stories in national politics. Let's move on to this security clearance story. Amanda, the White House announced it was considering revoking the security clearances of some ex-government officials, intelligence officials in particular. Who are they looking at and why?
So they're looking at former CIA Director John Brennan, former FBI Director James Comey, and former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper in particular. And this is just political. I mean, these are three people who have obviously been very critical of Donald Trump. And it's honestly pretty meaningless. These former heads of these intelligence agencies have sort of inactive security clearances. It's not like they're going into the FBI or to the CIA every day and reviewing top secret documents. It's more that if they are ever needed to do so, their security clearance can be reactivated quickly and then can go serve on a board, review documents, or do what they needed to do. So it's not really even just for the benefit of them. It's for the benefit of the government as well, who might need to call on the expertise of these former officials. Trump and the White House are saying that these former officials are somehow using their security access to make money to go on air and go on TV and criticize Trump. There's just no truth to that. It's just a purely political move of Trump trying to use his power to go after people who are criticizing him.
Now here's a listen to Press Secretary Sarah Sanders talking about the reasoning behind reconsidering the clearances.
Making baseless accusations of improper contact with Russia or being influenced by Russia against the president is extremely inappropriate. And the fact that people with security clearances are making these baseless charges provides inappropriate legitimacy to accusations with zero evidence.
So the idea that, okay, even if they're not using the security clearances, the fact that they have them gives legitimacy to statements they make in public in some way.
I mean, I think that's just... that's just silly. Honestly, no one is taking them seriously simply because they have a security clearance. I don't even know if many people know they still have a security clearance. People take them seriously because of the positions they've held and what they've done in the past. You know, they are these nonpartisan officials who have run the these intelligence agencies. I don't think it's because simply they have security clearances. So if you took away their security clearances, I think people would still be listening to them. They'd still be able to make the same criticisms, and they still have the same legitimacy.
And finally, a quick note on immigration. There's talk of an immigration vote that had been promised earlier being delayed again or not held at all. What's going on?
Sort of the same thing that always goes on with Congress. I mean, nothing happens on immigration, even though that there are, you know, Democrats want to do something. And there are many Republicans in the House who want to do something as well. Many of these Republicans are in races that are a little bit tighter, and many of their constituents want to see something done on immigration. And so there were some Republicans who received a promise from leadership to have a vote on an immigration bill. And Republicans are now saying, the Republican leadership is now saying they're not going to do it. And it seems to be that House Speaker Paul Ryan wants to avoid voting on a bill that seems like it will fail. Even though these Republicans say that was never the deal, they were always promised a vote, and it was unconditional whether or not the bill would pass. And so it's just, once again, Congress kicking the can down the road on immigration and nothing really happening.
We'll leave it there for now. Amanda, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Amanda Turkle is the Washington Bureau Chief for The Huffington Post. She was getting us caught up on some of the week's top stories in national politics.